Welcome to the Herbert Podcast. So we've just been walking around the Wildlife Photographer of the Year exhibition, which is here at the Herbert. And firstly, I'd like to talk to you about what your favourite images were in that show and any thoughts you might have. Ian?
I was particularly struck by the theme throughout the whole show, which was around the kind of interaction between people and nature. Yeah. Obviously, all of the images were focusing on wildlife, but so many of the images sometimes highlighted the negative impact of humans on nature, but then also when it was an image that was just displaying raw nature in its sort of purest self, you couldn't help be struck by what the photographer must have experienced witnessing that in the first person. Yeah. And how just emotive and powerful nature can be in its rawest form. And in a similar way to some of the documentaries we see on TV now, it just really brings to life the enormity and the power of nature. And these sorts of images in the exhibition give us a real insight into the natural world and what's happening around us all the time, but that we don't necessarily notice because we're busy and we're doing our, you know, getting on with our daily lives. And obviously it's a global photo exhibition, so it's giving you insight into some species that I'd personally never heard of. And the ones that I related to most were probably the species that you find in the UK, because you can really kind of have some sort of affinity to those than perhaps you don't see with the others.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's something that for a lot of, you know, our idea of nature, it's, you know, it's Africa, it's elsewhere, it's in the jungle, it's in the forests. And, you know, that isn't Coventry necessarily, but it doesn't mean that those, that, you know, we might not have tigers running around, but still there is a lot of nature to see in the local area, which is something we do want to cover a little bit today. Carl, do you have any favourite images?
So perhaps linked a little bit to the ones that Ian appreciated, I quite like the sort of the brutal images where it, not necessarily the ones with, you know, say like elephants sifting through landfill, which is obviously not a nice thing to do, but it's a very striking image, but is the kind of where nature has a little bit of a dark side, in the sense that, you know, we try to, you know, sort of all the photographers try to capture the sort of something ominous or something lurking in the background. And one of my particular favorites was the spider. There's a small spider and then there's a large spider that's out of focus behind, and you don't really cotton on to that until you really look at the photo. And I think it's one of the really important key messages that the exhibition perhaps gives, is that, you know, nature isn't pretty for many reasons, and whether that's because of human impact or just because of the nature of nature is, you know, it's a dog eat dog world.
Red and tooth and claw.
Yeah, it's really good to bring those images to life in that way.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think there is all these narratives, and I think it's so much of the exhibition. It's not just about, you know, presenting enamel and just appreciating its, you know, aesthetic qualities. There's so many stories, there's so much to be involved with, so much for us to think about nature. And I think it does that really well. It doesn't shy away from those things which, you know, aren't necessarily pretty about nature, and, you know, are quite upsetting in many ways about what we do to nature. I think increasingly we're, you know, disrespectful of the natural world. I think we treat a lot of it like it's ours to do what we want with, and I think people are becoming more aware, but it's how there's awareness, which is very important, but how do you actually do something about it? And I think that's something that's really well addressed within the exhibition. So tell us a little bit more about what you do within the Wildlife Trust.
I'm Director of Landscape Recovery at Warwickshire Wildlife Trust. So I lead the team that works with other people on their land. And we have two kind of main aims with that, trying to make more space for nature and to help people take action for wildlife. So we start by trying to understand how people are using land. So it might be the council with a park, or it might be a golf course, or it might be a farmer with their fields. And we understand how they're using that land and what's important to them and their business, or however they're using it. And then try and help them integrate nature into that space. We're very keen that we need to make this all sustainable and to support wildlife's recovery at a landscape scale by enabling nature to be part of our lives and not sort of disassociated like it has become. So really important to that is understanding how we can find a way to integrate nature into their business without them seeing it as an obstacle. So, you know, for example, in a farming situation, allowing people to still grow food on the farm because that's the priority of what their business is, but doing it in an environmentally and a nature-friendly way. Or in a park situation, you know, incorporating elements that like support nature, things like wildflower meadows or hedgerow management and things like that, but not changing the park so you still can't walk your dog. You know, it's really important that people still access these green spaces and are able to use the park for what they need to in their local area. But in so often these situations, there is the room, there is the ability for people, humans and nature, to coexist and for those things to complement each other. We just sometimes need to challenge our own behaviours, our own thinking around how we approach stuff.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, it's interesting some of the things that you say there about like integrating. I think it's always been, say, in the past, towns and cities, and then you have nature and everything's a little bit more, you know, bordered off. But then, I mean, like you say about wildflower meadows, I think that's something quite interesting. I think that's something I've heard about in the past, and people are becoming more aware of just things that can be done within the spaces that we inhabit just that help nature as well. I've heard things like, you know, like grass isn't necessarily that good for the environment. You know, we see that as being, okay, this is nature, this is, but even though it's grass is natural, it isn't necessarily, it's still urban in many ways, you know, a playing field.
Well, in the last couple of years, Coventry's had some really good examples of how they've integrated nature through the city with City of Culture and the years that have happened since then. So, you know, some of the areas have got wildflower verges where there's wildflowers planted on roadside verges where they didn't used to be. Mm. In some of the parks, like Lakeview Park in Coventry, they've changed the way in which they're managing some of the areas and increasing the amount of wildflowers or reducing the intensity of cutting in some parts as well. And there's tree planting and regreening of the city in some places. And they're looking at how they can use nature more effectively to help manage flood risk and things like that by helping to support in the context of climate change. And for us within the Wildlife Trust, climate change and nature go hand in hand. We need to be able to use nature to help us address climate change, to help us mitigate the future of climate change and to put in place ways in which that we can live more sustainably to reduce the impact of climate change in the future for all of us.
Yeah, I'd say for a lot of people, I think climate change is something which is, you know, it's a really worrying thought. It's we know that it's going to be impacting our lives, and it's kind of very difficult to turn the ship around now. Really, you know, we're heading towards, we've kind of developed lifestyles which aren't good for the environment in many ways. We're heading towards climate catastrophe, and it's really important doing everything we can to try and mitigate the impact that we're having. So, Carl, would you be able to tell us a little bit about what you do within the bush?
Sure. So I'm Carl Curtis. I'm the Director of Nature Reserves at Warwickshire Wildlife Trust. So where Ian focuses on other people's land, my role is, my team is to focus on our existing land. So we have 64 nature reserves across Coventry, Warwickshire and Solihull, and that's around 1,000 hectares. So to put that into some context, in the whole of Warwickshire, that's about 0.2% of the land, so it seems fairly small, but actually what the trust has done for the last 50 plus years, because we've been around since 1970, mm-hmm. is that, you know, we've had nature reserves which essentially have been those ark sites for wildlife. So they've always been high value sites for wildlife, lots of rich habitats and well managed habitats in there. And with our strategy, we've got a real step change in that we're trying to acquire more land. So we're trying to double our land holding by 2030. And that's contributing to the work that Ian's doing across his team in the wider landscape and trying to meet our sort of 30 by 30 strategy. So 30% of land managed in a wildlife friendly way by 2030, which will help us reverse, or as you said, you know, maybe turn that ship around in regards to climate change. Because in spite of all the management and the nature reserves and the high value sites that we've had, you know, over the last 50 years wildlife has declined, and so we need to change that. Importantly though, part of my role is about people too. So, you know, nature reserves aren't just for wildlife, they're for people too. Yeah. And I stick by the mantra that if there's no people, then there's no point, because if we can't get people onto our nature reserves and into their local green spaces, then they won't appreciate them, and then when they're under threat or things start disappearing, they're very, you know, they will not be inclined to take any action for it. So we're really keen that we provide positive opportunity for people to volunteer on our sites, and skills and experiences that they can take to their local green spaces, or, you know, do things in their own garden, in their own patch. But we have a real robust and very much appreciated volunteer workforce that help us manage our nature reserves too.
Yeah, I think it's you know, having people invested in nature, feeling that ownership over it's, you know, it's, you have your own garden, but then actually having that connection with, you know, your area, the land around you. So, I mean, the other things that we'd quite like to know about you is, you know, what is your personal relationship with the environment, with nature? How is this something you've were previously interested in, and how have you become actually involved in the work that you do?
Yeah, so I actually grew up on a farm, so I was lucky enough to be kind of surrounded by the countryside when I was younger, and that inspired my interest in nature. I became a fairly average photographer, I'd say, at an early age, and the thing about seeing the exhibition today really helped sort of take my mind back to that early experience of trying to capture wildlife in its rarest kind of rawest form. And I didn't really understand the science behind it then, but now working in the environmental sector, there's a lot of research that's gone into nature connectedness, which is basically the principle of the benefits to people of interacting with nature. Yeah. And it's easy for us to forget in a modern day world that we are actually part of nature, and humans are people, are nature too. And actually, there's a lot of research gone into the benefits from a health and well-being perspective of people interacting and connecting with nature. And photography provides that excellent opportunity for people to spend time in the outdoors and really focus in on something specific that they're trying to capture. Mm. And, you know, I did that at a young age, and fast forward a few decades, and it's stayed with me for the rest of my life in that benefit that I got from spending time outdoors, and that inspiration that I got that made me want to work and do this as a job full time. And I think exhibitions like this are a great opportunity for anybody, however knowledgeable they are, to be able to have that first kind of interaction with nature. Yeah. And the thing that we're really trying to convey within the Wildlife Trust is that nature is for absolutely everybody. You know, you don't need to know the Latin name of everything to be able to visit a nature reserve or to be able to go and birdwatch through a pair of binoculars, you know. Yeah. Sometimes it can be seen as a bit of an elitist thing where unless you do know what bird you're looking at, then you're not welcome. And it's absolutely not the case, you know. Yeah. We're trying to make nature as accessible as possible. And one of the key priorities for the Wildlife Trusts in the years ahead are to try and attract new audiences and to get people who don't necessarily normally interact with nature to get out onto their local park or green space, or even just watch birds on their garden feeder that, you know, they might be feeding over the winter. So photo exhibitions like this can be the first step on that journey, that people can be inspired by what they might see if they go out and interact with nature. And then it's very personal from then on in about their own journey, which is the brilliant thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, that's really interesting that you started off actually wildlife photography, and then that led you to having an active role in conservation and the Wildlife Trust. I mean, my background, I'm a photographer. That's what I do here. That's, you know, where my career has taken me. And, you know, I had that same thing of, you know, well-being being the reason for it. I realized that when I got a camera, I went outside, I went for walks and actually spent time outside. It was good for my well-being. And it was something I realized I was, you know, I just felt happier when I was doing it. And I think it's a really big thing. It's if you have that reason to actually go out and enjoy nature, that, you know, the photography is the reason, but it isn't necessarily what makes you feel better. There is just that wellness, kind of well-being benefit to being outside and interacting with your environment. So yeah, that's something that I've experienced before, but yeah, to me, I lent on more the photography than the nature. So how about you, Carl?
So my background is I was very fortunate to grow up out in the countryside. And so my childhood was either up a tree or in a hole. And from that made me, you know, connect with nature in a really positive way. And looking around the photo exhibition, like Ian said again, you know, it reminded me of things, you know, that I experienced when I was younger. So looking at some of the photos there today reminded me of an experience I had when I was walking out in the fields and a badger came charging through a patch of stinging nettles, you know, and I'm no good as a photographer and I didn't have a camera at the time, but it was one of those things that would, you know, was imprinted as an image on my mind. And it's really, you know, really, really positive thing. And it really made me feel like that, you know, that being outdoors was a good thing, and therefore, you know, nature was important, and I wanted to do it. So that became my kind of vocation of wanting to work outdoors. And it's really interesting that when I developed, you know, as I got older, it was something I always went back to in terms of being outdoors was always a good place. You know, all of the most people, I think, if you ask them when was your best experience or your best, you know, sort of kind of time in life, it's often actually outdoors on a school trip or something like that. So, you know, there's a real linkage there between people and good times and being outdoors. And one of the things that sort of really motivates me is about trying to get more people to do that, and again through our work on our nature reserves. But it's a really interesting concept. As children, we're told scary fairy stories or fairy tales of, like, you know, the deep dark woods and don't wander off here, you'll get lost, and those kinds of things. And I think we need to change that narrative, because actually I feel most safe in a woodland, not sat here in the middle of Coventry. This makes me a little bit, you know, it's a little bit triggering. But, you know, I'd feel far more comfortable in a wood surrounded by trees with perhaps nobody else there but wildlife. And I think, you know, we need to build that as a new normal, that actually being outside, and okay, you know, you might live in the city centre, and I live in the middle of a town, but, you know, there's an old disused railway and there's a park, you know, behind the back of my house, and I've got, you know, a nice garden, and, you know, and I'm able to get those interactions. So you don't have to go out into the wilds to experience nature. It literally is on your doorstep, and you can do lots of things that will, you know, attract wildlife and have those interactions. And, you know, people could take five steps from their front door and take a similar image that's captured in these photo exhibitions. It's quite easy to do. The wildlife is out there. We just need to appreciate it and you know, sort of absorb it more.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, and that's something that we hope people visiting the exhibition will feel. You know, they'll see it and they'll be inspired to do themselves. I mean, there's throughout the exhibition, there's quotes from some of the judges that are dotted around, and one of them is from Selena Chien, who says, "Be curious. You don't need to travel far to explore the natural world. Discover nature on your doorstep. Observe it, listen to it, and be curious in everything you do." So for anyone who comes to the exhibition, is inspired, see these quotes, what would you be able to go out and photograph locally now? Say if you picked up a camera and just walked out, you know, 5-10 minutes out of your doorstep in Coventry, you know, what animals do you think people would be likely to see?
So if you're not travelling far from home, and obviously depending on what time of year it is, of course, so, you know, we sit here on a very cold, frosty day, and no doubt within 10 spaces of walking out your front door, there'll be a spider's web with some, you know, frost or dewdrops or some lovely crisp grass, you know. So what going out and interacting with nature and wildlife isn't about having those big encounters with rare and, you know, quite sort of, you know, magnificent wildlife, you know, seeing maybe a fox or, you know, an otter or something like that. That, don't get me wrong, that is great, and it's you know, they are real sort of, you know, memorable moments, but there's beauty in every aspect of nature as you step out your door. So, you know, if you're out in the street and you live near to a graveyard, go and have a look at the lichens that are growing on the gravestones. You know, you'll have a rainbow of different colours, you know, yellows and greens and purples and things like that. And just, you know, it's about going and taking the time and really looking, and not just, you know, trying to spot something, but it's just standing there and absorbing those things. And you know, not far from here, we've got Brandon Marsh, which this time of year is fantastic for a starling murmuration. So if you want to see one of the wonders of our UK nature, a starling murmuration is well up there. And, you know, that is on the doorstep of Coventry. So you can go to Brandon Marsh around 10 to 4 this afternoon and go and watch tens of thousands of starlings, you know, dancing in the sky and going to bed. So there's lots of wildlife out there. And again, any time of year. And of course, with the seasons, we see that change. So, you know, what you see today will be different in 6 weeks' time, will be different in 6 weeks' time to that. So, you know, it's not a case of, people should never get bored of their local green spaces, because there's always something changing.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. So one of the other quotes that is in the exhibition is, "Communicate your story." And this is from Lucas Bustamante. And he says, "Think of the bigger picture and tell the whole story. Inspire people with the beauty of the natural world, but also help them think about the problems it faces. Learning about nature is the first step to protecting it." And I think that's something you can see in the exhibition. There's this real thread of these narratives and using the images you're taking to communicate kind of important messages that I think people do need to know. So, Ian, what can people do? You know, what problems are being faced in, say, in the local area in terms of wildlife, and what's the Wildlife Trust doing about it, and what can other people do to be involved in that?
Well, one of the a really relatable project that we've got at the moment that sort of resonated with me when you were saying that quote was the Sherbourne Valley Project. So Our Sherborne Valley project is a project that Warwickshire Wildlife Trust are leading, but we're working in partnership with the City Council, the University, Severn Trent, Environment Agency, Citizen Housing, and a bunch of other organisations that are coming together around the river in Coventry. And the first thing to say about that is that most people that are listening to this might think, where's the river in Coventry? And the reality of that is it's beneath your feet.
Oh, wow.
So the River Sherborne rises out of the ground to sort of northwest near Cawley Moor, near the service station on the M6, and then flows down the hill, comes through Owlsley, through Lakeview Park, down sort of next to the Holyhead Road into the city, where it goes into Spon End, disappears into a big pipe, and then disappears from view, goes underneath the rest of the city, underneath the big pipe, right beneath our feet. And it's not too far from where we're sitting right now recording this, underneath mm-hmm. the ground. The pipe is big enough that you can drive a car through, so it's not a small pipe. And the river is effectively hidden from view and has been since the 1950s when it was put into this pipe to help the city grow. And at the time, people that were developing the city decided that rather than make a feature out of the river, like so many cities have, they would put it through a pipe and then allow them to develop where they wanted to above the city, above ground. And our project on the Sherborne Valley project is about trying to make the best of the river where it is above ground and restore it to its natural beauty. So in places like Lakeview Park and Cowden Wedge, we are restoring the natural processes of the river, trying to help it re-wiggle, if you like, and turn into a river that you would more often associate if you were trying to imagine one, because it's been straightened and modified by people over time. Mm-hmm. And then when the river goes through the pipe in the city, we're going to try and tell the story virtually, bringing it to the surface in a figurative kind of way, because we can't unfortunately bring it to the surface because somebody's built a ring road and lots of other buildings on top of it. Yeah. But what we can do is help tell the story of the river beneath people's feet and explain that the city is where it is because of the river. That's why settlers chose to come here in the first place. And it's shaped the future of the city ever since in the hundreds of years that have passed. So this project is about 2 years into its duration so far, and we've already had some huge impacts on the river itself. So we've done a stage zero river restoration on Cowden Wedge, where we've basically re-diverted the river to allow it to follow its natural course away from where humans had put it in the wrong place, effectively, in the past. And we're now working on some really innovative interpretation that we're going to be bringing into the city in the future, so that when you're walking and shopping in the city or spending time in a town centre, you can have a greater understanding of the river beneath your feet. And that all of that is really important about raising awareness and that connection and telling the whole story of the river. Because the river flows from one side of the city through to the other and then connects on with the River Sow and then on to the River Avon. And that landscape is really important because communities along the river are connecting with it in different spaces, mm-hmm. but it's a river for everybody and it's the city's river. So a big part of our project is trying to get new audiences, people that have perhaps not thought about the river or connected with their green spaces before, to come out and enjoy spending time in the outdoors, learning how rivers work, learning mm-hmm. why it's important. And rivers are so critical to so many faiths and religions and the stem of multiple kind of connections with the natural world. So there's lots of opportunities for different communities within Coventry to connect with their outdoor space.
That's amazing. I had no idea about that. That's something that, I mean, I'm someone who's fairly new to Coventry, but no, I didn't know that was a thing that had been done, like, you know, like piping a river.
Mm. And it's fairly crazy.
I mean, is that something that, like, people, is that... How good for the environment is that, you know, doing that?
It's really interesting. It's obviously not great for the environment because you're basically stopping how the river wants to work naturally and putting it through a pipe. And the reason why they did it at the time was that, you know, roll back 70, 80 years, the understanding of how rivers worked and their benefits and our impacts on the rivers wasn't quite as at the level it is now. Mm. And the need to develop the city following the war was important, and they wanted to invest in a modern city for the future. So the thinking at the time was that it'd be best to put the river into a pipe. If they were doing that consideration now, it wouldn't happen and they would make a real feature out of the river. The unintended consequences of putting a river into a pipe is that people can act in a way that would pollute the river above ground without knowing that there's a river down below. So, you know, oil spills and other things can go in from factory and industry and from roads. And there's that disassociation that there's actually a river beneath their feet that they're polluting. And, you know, obviously if they could see the water flowing, people would change their behaviour and reduce their impact.
Yeah, no, It's remarkable. It's really interesting. Something I just kind of want to talk a little bit more about. When you said about fear of nature, because that's something that I've, you know, I kind of believe in it as well. I do think, you know, like when you see Bear Grylls on the TV, it's all about like, oh, nature's trying to kill me. And I think there's so much of, you know, the stories that we've had in the past and we see films, there's this idea that kind of nature's our enemy. And I think it's just, that is something which absolutely isn't true, because actually without, you know, our environments, then we can't survive either. Yeah. So yeah, that's something that it'd be nice to talk about.
Again, what Ian said is, you know, there's this disconnect, and actually it's like, you know, we're humans and nature's nature, and that's separate to us, but actually it relies on us as much as we rely on it. Yeah. So if you think about pollinators for our food, you know, if we had no pollinators, we'd all starve to death in the next 12 months. You know, that you know, these are serious, you know, issues. But it is, I think it's changing, definitely changing. And you see programs like Planet Earth, where, you know, there's a real message, and a message, you know, it's a strong message, don't get me wrong. But there's a message of, you know, hope, and that we can turn these things around. But, you know, we need to accept the fact that we're part of nature, and that we, again, we need it as much as it needs us. And that we shouldn't be fearful of nature. It isn't something to be scared of. So again, going back to the fairy tales, you know, it's the deep dark wood, it's the big bad wolf, you know, it's all of those things. We need to move away from that sort of rhetoric and actually embrace that nature is as much there to help us. And again, a little bit what Ian covered at the end with about how, you know, you can get that, you know, we need people to take action. We can no longer sit in a society where we have, you know, the majority of people, and they perhaps take the sort of the passive view that, like, there's the likes of the Wildlife Trust, or there's someone I know who's interested in nature who's solving these problems for me and my community and my society. That isn't the case. This is everybody's responsibility. This is everybody's, you know, to everybody's benefit. You know, there's nobody who it comes off better if we save the environment. Yeah. Everybody comes off better one way or another. So it's really important that we try and get people to get this into almost it's just normal. It's just normal. And again, I grew up wanting to be a conservationist. And when I told people like that, you know, they'd expect me to have long hair and wear green and live up a tree. And they weren't entirely wrong on that. But, you know, that is something that we need to, you know, that's something, that perception we need to change, that nature is for other people who like the colour green and, you know, things like that. It's not, that shouldn't be the case. It's for everybody. As Ian said, again, you know, you don't need to be an expert. You don't need to know every species of butterfly that you can find in Warwickshire. You don't need to identify every garden bird. It's just sort of the fact that you can see garden birds, you enjoy them, and you might do something to keep them there. That's the really important bit.
Yeah. In real simple terms, nature provides us with the clean water that we drink, the fresh air that we breathe, the food that we eat. And without it, if we start losing species, because it's all interconnected, you know, when we're at primary school and we learn about these food webs of how different things eat different things, when you start losing things in that food web, it all starts to break down, and the potential then for the impact on humanity as a whole is huge. Yeah. So we need to create a way of living for everybody that provides that kind of sustainable way that isn't eroding our wildlife, because once it's gone, it's gone. Yeah. And if you lose those species that have that knock-on impact that then mean that other species become extinct, we start to get to this tipping point then, which we can't undo. So it's in everybody's interest that we find a way of making a more sustainable world for us all to live. There are some species that are really adaptable. So, you know, the gulls, the pigeons, the foxes, grey squirrels, they're actually doing really well. And it's a strange sort of world that we live in, where, you know, there's a lot of news in the media and sometimes quite a lot of noise around the state of nature in the world. But if you're driving along, you can look out the window and it can all look green, and you can assume that actually that's okay. But it's not, doesn't, just because it's green doesn't mean to say it's rich in wildlife. And the species that are adaptable are really the exceptions. There are lots of species in the world that aren't adjusting to the way in which humans are living, or aren't adjusting quick enough to climate change. And so we've got this strange sort of paradox of some species appearing to represent the wider world that we're living in, saying everything is fine, or people perhaps misunderstanding that green is rich in wildlife, when actually if you peel back the surface, there's lots of species that are in real trouble. And I think another example with the photo exhibition was just how well it highlighted the plight of some of the species in the images. I particularly liked how the references at the bottom of the photo kind of told the story, the backstory of how the photo was taken, and also the species concerned, because, you know, we need to make sure that people are aware of the challenges that a lot of our wildlife are facing.
Yeah, no, that's right. And like you said, the fact that, say, if one species doesn't adapt and it has that really important part of the food chain, then that has a knock-on effect to another the species. And it's
And again, with the photo exhibition, it's really interesting because some of the photographs are of wildlife that are really rare and fragile. But if you went back 50, 100 years, they would be commonplace. Yeah. So one of the other things that we need to tackle in some way is this sort of shift in baseline of what is the new normal. So, you know, my grandfather would go to a woodland and hear nightingales in a wood. Probably, you know, I grew up down in Wiltshire, and there was woodlands all around, and, you know, you would have heard nightingales. Now, my dad may have grown up and gone to a couple of woodlands, and there might have been a couple of nightingales holding on, but he probably would have still heard them. I've never heard a nightingale. But so to me, it's like, that's, you know, I know that that's a problem because we've lost such an enigmatic and important species in a particular area, but most people don't, and you don't miss what you never knew, essentially. And it's like, well, actually, the longer we persist with doing what we're doing and, you know, depleting wildlife, we have this ever-shifting baseline of what is the new normal. And that is really, really dangerous.
Yeah.
And something we do need to tackle.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. There's just animals which just seem odd that they were ever here, if you've never experienced them. Like, you know, there were wolves, you know, there were wolves in this country. Lynx. And that's, but now, you know, those predators, people decided, you know, they didn't want them around and they're gone. And then it seems unnatural for them to have ever been there when that isn't the case. And that's it with things that it shouldn't be that way. But we've just gotten used to the fact that they are that way. And it's a shame.
Absolutely.
Mm. Right. So what are the next steps for the Wildlife Trust?
Well, I think the photo exhibition really highlighted that we're facing a nature emergency, and the impact of humans on nature is at a level it's never happened before, and it's unsustainable. And if we carry on doing what we are doing as a society to nature, both in this country and around the world, we're going to get to a tipping point where we will start to lose species at a rate that, frankly, hasn't been seen since the dinosaurs. It's that extreme. So in order for us to try and stop that, and to live in a better place that is fit for future generations, we need everybody to play their part. Now, the first way in which that can happen is people need to connect with nature and understand nature in the first instance. So something like the photo exhibition that's here at the Herbert is a brilliant opportunity for people to have that first realization of the power and the wonder of nature. Beyond that, we need them to then move into that sort of caring about nature and wanting to take action for wildlife. And that's a brilliant opportunity of how they can link in with their local wildlife trust, because Warwickshire Wildlife Trust have got this initiative called Team Wilder, where we're asking people to come together to take action in their local area to help make a small change in their environment to help support nature. If you like, everybody's got an individual piece of the jigsaw they can bring to the party and put in. And those individual pieces of the jigsaw collectively make up the puzzle that we need to solve this sort of nature crisis. Mm. And by everybody playing their part, whether it be putting a window box on the side of their flat or making space for nature in their garden, or a farmer changing the way that they're farming their land to help be more environmentally friendly, all of us can come together to create these kind of stepping stones in the landscape that will allow wildlife to move through and to move out of our nature reserves and live everywhere. Because wildlife should be for everyone and should exist everywhere. So that's what we're trying to aim to do. But we can't do that on our own. So we're asking people to come to the Herbert and see the photo exhibition, be inspired. And then when you're inspired, come and take action for wildlife. And the Wildlife Trust are really well placed to support them to do that.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. Well, thank you both for coming in today. It's been really interesting chatting with you. And yeah, I hope that you've inspired people to pick up cameras and go out and explore Coventry and the wonderful wildlife that we have in the local area.